Can you remember when you learned about human sexuality and from whom? Ideally, our parents will be open about sexuality and answer our questions as we go along. Some choose to sit us down and have the talk as puberty approaches or makes itself obvious. And many, many parents just don't quite know what to do and when, and that's why Amy Lang is in business. She's a sexuality educator and the creator of a website, birdsandbeesandkids.com. Also the author of two books, one on kids and sex education, one on teens and dating. Amy Lang gives workshops online and in person. She is the daughter of longtime JPR contributor Frank Lang of Nature Notes fame, and therefore has ties to Ashland and is live in our studio. Amy, thanks for joining us.
My total pleasure.
Is it true that you had a moment of panic when your son wanted to talk about sex organs?
Yes, totally. I had been a sex educator for over 16 years, and here's my sweet four-year-old getting ready for a bath. And he was hanging on to his privates, and I thought he was going to tell me it felt good, and I completely freaked out internally. So I'm super proud that I was able to stay calm on the outside, but inside, I was like, no, don't tell me that. I can't deal with that. I don't know what to say to you. And I was super surprised because I had just assumed I was going to be great at all the sex talks, like even talking about privates with little guys or, you know, older kids. And I was not ready. I didn't know what to say. I didn't know when. I didn't know how.
It turns out he just wanted to talk about veins.
Yes. He's like, oh, I can see the veins in there where the blood goes. And I was like, yes, get in the bathtub. Don't ever talk to me about your penis again.
But then what did you do from that point? Because here you had been counseling people for 16 years,
yeah.
You said, by that point.
Yeah, and I was really comfortable talking to pretty much anybody about sexuality. I'd done tons of pregnancy and birth control counseling, HIV counseling, abortion counseling. I loved it, and I was really comfortable in that arena. And so what I realized is a couple things. First of all, I didn't understand why parents weren't talking to their kids about sex. I was like, what's the big deal? This isn't can't be that hard. And then when I was faced with my own kiddo and something that was not actually really about, you know, sex, I was, you know, I discovered there's this weird barrier, even for a sex educator. And so I thought, you know what, I've got to figure this out. I love this stuff. I can figure this out. So I did a bunch of research and started figuring out for myself. And then I thought, well, I have a background as an adult educator, and I have a master's degree in adult education. I was like, hey, I can combine my two loves, talking about sex and working with adults. So that's how Birds and Bees and Kids came to be.
So where does it generally come? I mean, obviously, for some people, it come from a lack of knowledge, which you did not have
right at
that point when you ended up at that moment with your son. Simple embarrassment, something else? I mean, what did you figure out for where it comes from?
So, you know, I've been at this for a long time, 11 years, and as near as I can tell, it's like a combination of things. So it can be just total lack of information. It can be that we didn't have good examples when we were growing up about how to be open about sexuality with kids. So just no modeling. It also has to do with this, I think, this sense that we want our kids to be safe and simple and pure and innocent and not be corrupted by the world. And as adults, we know about sex and sexuality. We have our own personal experience. Some of us have more information than others just about the nuts and bolts stuff. And so we look at our child and we think, oh, no way. I'm not going to expose you to this. And so all of our sort of negative experiences get ahead of all the wonderful positive stuff about sex and sexuality.
So we want to talk about unicorns and rainbows. And at some point, we're going to have to talk about vulvas and phalluses.
Exactly. And so most parents actually cave into their discomfort. And then the other thing that happens is that we don't want our precious snowflakes to be uncomfortable. Why would we make our kids uncomfortable on purpose? So we avoid. And of course, this isn't true for every parent, right? Some parents are just like completely comfortable. They talk about everything way sooner than I would recommend sometimes. So, you know, I have my own, I wear two hats, right? I have a beautiful 15-year-old boy that I torture with sex talks. And he is, of course, mortified by my work. And so but I know what to say when and how to say it. So it's just like push-pull, even for me.
So, okay, that gets into a great zone here, but when is the best time? I mean, should you just be answering questions directly with the proper names and everything from the first time your kids ask at age 2 or 3 or something?
Yeah, I mean, generally speaking, we should just be as open as we possibly can from the beginning. And I think that sometimes freaks parents out because they, again, back to that like adult lens, we're looking at our kids with our adult lens. We're not thinking about their experience. So little kids are super open to the conversation. They're curious. They're not going to be grossed out when you tell them how the usual way that babies are made. Your 10-year-old? Totally. It's disgusting, right? And it should be. Sex isn't for kids. But your five-year-old and your four-year-old and your three-year-old, when you're talking about the correct names for privates, when you talk about the usual way babies are made, when you talk about it in your family, in the cocoon of your values, it's better for kids. They're safer. They make better decisions. They feel more confident about who they are.
How much should you let the kids decide what the terms will be? I mean, if they want to call it a wee-wee instead of a penis, for example.
So they're not the boss of pretty much anything. So if we think about it in terms, if you think about sexuality education at home in the same way we think about like how we feed our kids, most of us do not say to our kids, hey, what do you want for dinner? And they'll say, I want lollipops and some jam. Followed with a side of donuts. We're not going to go there.
Don't forget the ice cream.
And right, ice cream, right? And with ice cream for dessert. So if you think about sexuality, the education the same way, you don't wait for your kids to ask you about like, what's the difference between brown and white rice? I'm very interested in this. Same with sex. We don't hang around. We shouldn't be hanging around and waiting for them to say, so how does all this work? So the minute they ask questions, you need to answer them appropriately, age appropriately, which means less detail but factually accurate. And you also really need to demonstrate that you know what you're talking about. Seriously, even if you don't quite know, it's just fake it till you make it in some ways. You need to demonstrate your knowledge by actually starting the conversations. It's not their responsibility to ask us questions about sexuality. It's our responsibility to teach them.
So the 15-year-old you've been torturing, or say you've been torturing, yes. Mm-hmm. So when did he first ask?
He did not ask. So he, I started Birds and Bees and Kids when he was about 5. And so my deal was in my head, I was like, I had some books about sex for kids on the shelf. So I said to myself, if he pulls one off the shelf, I will read it to him. So at 3, he pulled off the classic 70s book, How Babies Are Made, off our shelf. And I was like, all right, here I go. And I read it to him. And I skipped the part about how humans make babies.
Did you?
Yes, because I was chicken.
Ah.
And he hopped off the couch. He said, okay. Hopped off the couch. And I sat there and I thought, oh, you chicken. So the next time that book came up and I made it come up, I read the whole dang thing. And you know what he did? He hopped off the couch and he said, okay, mama. And we were off and running.
Okay, lots more to talk about talking to kids about sex. Amy Lang helps parents with this all the time. Her website is called birdsandbeesandkids.com. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange when we come back from this break. Back with Amy Lang and you in a minute 10. Back on the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Our guest today is Amy Lang, who is she's got a master's degree in adult education and put it to good use in teaching adults about how to talk to their kids about sexuality. She's the founder of birdsandbeesandkids.com, has written a couple of books about sexuality and dating, and is here in the studio because she's from Ashland originally. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange as we talk about appropriate ways to talk to children about sexuality and appropriate times for that matter as well. 800-838-3760. Maybe you have a story to share as well. We'd love to hear that. 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. So I understand, Amy, your own interest in sex education goes back years before you began doing this as a business. Talk about Ms. Magazine, an article got you going, is that right?
Yeah, it's interesting. So I did not... I didn't plan to become a sex educator. I don't think anybody really like sets out, you know, in early childhood and says, I'm going to be a sex educator. So when I was about 9, I read, people who remember Ms. Magazine, which still exists, they had a section called Stories for Free Children. And I was reading through a pile of Ms. Magazines and I stumbled across an article about a woman named Terry. And some of you may remember this. It was just very uncomfortable image of her dead on a hotel room floor, and she had died from an illegal abortion. And that image was burned in my brain. And I don't know how much I understood at the time, but I connect that with my work now because that was sort of a traumatic experience for me. And so I learned and learned and learned. You know, my parents were great. We had lots of books and some conversations. And but as I progressed throughout high school and into college, I was just very interested in reproductive rights, which actually led me to volunteering on a telephone hotline. And I was doing pregnancy and abortion counseling. And that's where I discovered how much I really enjoyed and was fascinated by just sexual health in general. So, I have a BA in women's studies, and I always used to joke, like, my parents would say, what are you going to do with that? And I'd be like, oh, I'm going to work at Planned Parenthood. What else do you do with a women's studies degree? And eventually I did work at Planned Parenthood. And that's when I had the idea for Birds and Bees and Kids, because parents were also calling in and saying, I got to talk to my kid. I don't know how. I don't know what to say. And I'd say, you're right. You do. And I don't have any help for you, really. You know, Planned Parenthood in Seattle at the time had some education programs, but not enough. And that was also the other thing that made me think, parents need help. Like, this is not rocket science. It's not complicated. It's just socially and emotionally fraught. And so I believe that it's our job as parents to figure out ways to separate our emotionality around the issue, our discomfort around the issue, and get smart about, you know, how things work, what goes where. You can learn that anywhere. It's not hard. There's lots of resources for adults to learn that stuff. And then to get really clear about our own values and start talking openly with our kids. No one dies from having a sex talk. I've only had one person tell me that their spouse in sex ed class in junior high, he threw up.
Really?
Yes. So I've been doing this for 11 years. I've been in front of thousands of parents. So it's not going to kill anyone, and not knowing actually could kill someone. So, you know, I just believe that my job as a mom is to keep my child healthy and safe. Talking about sexuality is all about health and safety. That's our primary job as parents. So we've got to step it up.
You know, one of the things I was surprised about, and I mentioned this in the first hour, too, because we're talking about sexual assault education, which is required in Oregon now. But to find that the 24 states in the District of Columbia mandate sex education, 37 states require that information on abstinence be required.
So, you know, that was a brilliant idea, and it makes parents feel really good and adults feel good. If you just say no, kids, just don't do it. And the reality is, all we have to do is look at years of data. Teenagers have sex. 50% of high schoolers have had sex intercourse at least once. Like, they're doing it. And by the time they get to be seniors in high school, that ratchets up to about 60% of seniors. So our kids are sexual. They're sexual from the beginning. It's nothing to be afraid of. And as you know, as adults, the more comfortable you are, the more you know about sexuality, the better you feel about yourself. And that makes it easier for you to make better decisions. So we have this great opportunity to give our kids what we didn't get. And we can give them a gift of a really healthy experience of their own sexuality, healthy information, good, strong values. You know, I'm down with waiting. I think kids should wait until they're in their late 20s, early 30s before they have sex. I'm just kidding. Just kidding. I just feel like everybody's mature enough then to handle all of our ramifications.
Your brain has stopped growing.
Right, your brain stopped growing. So, but that's not going to happen. And so I'm super pragmatic. We need to make sure kids know how their bodies work. We need to make sure they understand what consent is. Consent is agreeing. When everyone agrees to sexual behavior, the sexual activity, whatever, we all need to understand that. Our kids need to understand that in a fundamental way, so that when they're getting hot and heavy with their first boyfriend or girlfriend, when sex is on the table, they've done some work and they have some education. So they understand that, yeah, sex is awesome. But they also need to understand that the most fun of sex is everything that happens before parts go in orifices, right? That's the fun part of sex. So why not get busy learning all that where you're safer. And then if you're ready, when you're ready,
you'll know what happens.
You'll know, right?
And you can make a better decision.
Totally. And, you know, again, you know, I'm talking about being super open. You know, the Dutch are the rock and roll when it comes to sex education. They've got it all down, like early, often, comprehensive. You know, they don't talk about abstinence. They talk about pleasure and how great sex is and that it comes with great responsibility, right? So it's these two things. So I think the other thing parents don't get is how influential we are. Study after study shows that parents are kids' primary influence when it comes to making decisions about dating, relationships, and sex. So if you're not talking, you're not influencing. So if you want your kids to wait longer, if you want them to be protected when they make that choice, you have to be their sex educator.
We are talking to Amy Lang, the creator of BirdsAndBeesAndKids.com. It's a site to help you learn how to talk to kids about sex. And it's something that parents, obviously, as you just heard Amy say, need to do. We can take some phone calls. Here is Leslie in Ashland. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Amy Lang.
Thanks. My question is around some of the emotionally fraught areas that's a bit more unusual. I have a 7-year-old adopted son. And so I noticed that when I start to think about how am I going to have these talks, like I don't have that kind of safe area of, you know, mommy and daddy loved each other so much and this happened, but there's, you know, this other person involved, and he knows about his birth mom, but he knows nothing about his birth dad because we don't really know much about him. So he doesn't really know that this sort of male person was involved in his conception. He just kind of thinks he grew in his birth mom's tummy. So I'm just kind of wondering, in my situation or in, like, same-sex couples, you know, when the baby, when the reproductive part happened separate from the family, do you have advice about that?
Well, great question. Thanks for that, Leslie.
Yeah, that's a wonderful question. And so here's the good news. Yay, he's seven. So seven is really my personal cutoff point for, like, your kids need to know the usual way that babies are made by the time they're age seven. I really want them to know by five, but by seven is fine. So in your circumstance, he knows he was adopted. He knows you are his mom and your partner is his other parent. So that's great because you've already been talking about his birth mom. So when I would talk to him, and there's a great book that's called It's So Amazing that I highly recommend. You're going to buy that book. Books, everybody listening, books are your best friend for starting the conversation. So you're going to buy that book. You're going to read it yourself first, and then you're going to read it to him. And so when you get to the part about how babies are made, and it's detailed, when you talk to him, you can say, and in our family, this is what happened. So your birth mom, whatever her name is, she had a partner. And we don't know very much about him, and they had sex. And we are so lucky because she got pregnant with you and she wasn't able to raise you, which you know, and so she had you and then we got to adopt you. So she's called your birth mom because that's where you grew in her belly. And the birth father is the person that gave the sperm. And then you're just matter of fact and simple. And here's the deal. He will say, oh, huh, wow, why couldn't you have a baby? And then you explain. Whatever your circumstances, we're two moms, your dad, his sperm weren't working, I didn't have the right eggs, whatever. So you tell them very, very simply, the thing you have to hold in your head is that you are the one with the anxiety, the problem, the concern, the worry. Your child clueless and yay, right? Because he's super open, he's a blank slate, so you can tell him his amazing birth story. You know, only I think like 1% of pregnancies or 2% end up being adopted out. So it's amazing. She gave, and I'm sure you're using this language. It was an amazing gift, right? So there's lots of resources for adoptive kiddos and parents and families. So I would definitely talk to parents of older kids that have been adopted about what happens for them, the kinds of questions kids ask, and you want to get ahead of his questions as he grows up. At seven, he's not going to have tons of questions, but at 12 and 14, when he's hitting puberty and he becomes potentially trying, he may throw some stuff back at you. You need to be ready for that sort of thing. And, you know, and earlier is better. It's easier on you. That's the deal, man. Easier on the parents. Kids are fine. Our kids are fine. The best place for our kids to be uncomfortable is with us.
Rather than somebody else.
Exactly.
Amy Lang is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. She's been teaching adults for years about how to talk to their kids about sex. Her website is birdsandbeesandkids.com. She's written a couple of books. She talks a lot in places like the radio. You can join us at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. I noticed in the discussion with Leslie, who was asking about how to talk to her adoptive son about how that happened, you weren't adding details. You weren't adding things in this scenario about, you know, well, you know, the parents loved each other, you know.
Right.
You know, any sort of details other than what physically happened.
Right. And if they don't know the relationship, you know, I have a friend who's adopted her daughters, and one of the daughters, the parents were actually in a relationship. The daughter they gave up for adoption was the third kid. They were not in any shape to be parenting. And so the mom and the birth father decided that the best thing for their family, the best thing for this coming baby, was to put her up for adoption. So if you know the details, go ahead and talk about them. But again, you know, this whole idea that people have sex because they're in love, we know that's not true. People have sex because it feels good and they wanna. And, you know, ideally, when we're talking to our kids, we want their first time to be with someone that they love and respect and have good communication with, because we want them to really look back without regret on that first time experience. Most adults regret their first time experience.
Truly.
Yeah, in some way. Lots of folks also did really well and had wonderful first time experiences, but most people kind of have some regrets about it. So your goal for your kid should be this no regret first time experience, which is why I wrote Dating Smarts. It's about healthy relationships. It's about clarifying your values. It's for kids to help them figure out, like, what's my plan? What do I like in a person? You know, how do I know if I'm in an unhealthy relationship? You know, honestly, most parents are not exhibiting healthy relationships, right? That's why we all end up divorced. It's not all of us, but 50% end up in divorce, right? So I figured that it would be really helpful for teenagers to really start thinking about this before they're in the thick.
So you mentioned that it's only the parents that are going to feel squeamish about the discussion. Now, if you don't hit the window, though, and you mentioned that your 5 is the great age, 7, you're getting a little late in that window. If you don't enter in that window and the kids do start getting older and start hearing things, are they going to be less comfortable hearing it from their parents after that?
Yeah, so after about 8 or so, kids, the ooh gross factor kicks in. So there's some natural aversion to sex, which, yay, we love that, right? So there's natural aversion to sex. There's discomfort around it. And
go ahead, take a drink of water there. We're talking to Amy Lang here on the Jefferson Exchange.
Sorry about that. Frogs show up. So when they get older, they get more uncomfortable and they also get smarter, right? So there's nothing like a 12-year-old saying, I had it at school. I already know everything, right? And then the parent will say, oh, thank God. Right. But really, the parent needs to think, oh, hell no. There's no way you got what you needed. So as kids get less comfortable, our job is to say, oh, I get it. You're uncomfortable. You're uncomfortable. I'm uncomfortable. You don't have a choice. Just give me 2 minutes. Explain what you need to explain. Get in, get out, and keep talking to them. Easiest place to talk to your older kids is in the car.
Ah, because they can't leave.
Right. They're behind you. They can't. And no eye contact. And when you're talking to boys in particular, do not, like, sit down. It's Wednesday. It's hump day. We're going to talk about sex. Stare them in the eye and, you know, start blah, blah, blahing. Boys in particular are not down with the straight across eye contact. That's big boys and little boys, actually. So talk to your kids of both sexes when you're doing something else. Talk when you're doing the dishes. Talk when you're, you know, we watch TV shows with Milo. We watch the entire That 70s Show on Netflix throughout his middle school
years. That was a good chance to talk about sexuality,
tons of stuff. And it was funny, and we had lots of conversations. So our job is to be sneaky and manipulative and have a plan and not worry about our kids being uncomfortable. That their discomfort is the least of your worries. I don't think there's anything more uncomfortable than a teen pregnancy.
Yeah, truly. Last time you were here, we talked about kids thinking in terms of being sexy very young. I mean, with smartphones and the internet in most pockets and 6 years more time elapsed now, I imagine that trend has continued.
Yes. It's a problem. So this is another reason why it's more important now than ever for parents to be on the front lines, because their chance that their children are going to be exposed either through, because they're curious and they Google big boobs, or they're looking up, you know, don't Google Harry Potter, man. I mean, you misspell something and you're going to end up seeing, you know, something you can't unsee. So kids spend more time now in 6 years in, trying to avoid seeing inappropriate stuff. And some of them are pretty savvy and some of them fall down the rabbit hole. They click on something because they're curious. And so our job as parents is to make sure that A, we talk to our kids openly about the things they might see on the internet. Even at 5, you can see pictures and videos of naked people on the internet. This is not safe or okay for kids. Your heart, your mind, and your body aren't ready for something like this. So you need to be really open with them. And then you need to front load them with healthy information about sexuality. Make sure they have great books like It's So Amazing or It's Perfectly Normal, so they understand what that looks like. So when they're exposed to something, then they have a basis for it. It's like, this is sex. It's sexual, but it's not what sex really is. And so, you know, unfortunately, most parents are in this lovely mindset of not my kid. Oh, my kid would never. My kid's not interested. I do that. My kid is 15 and a half.
He's interested.
Right. Of course he is. He's human. So if we are able to say maybe my kid, and then we are willing to be open with our kids. And, you know, my rule of thumb is your kid should have no more than 2 devices that they can access the internet on in your home. And they have parental controls on them. The younger they are, the more blocking and monitoring software. This is stuff you can Google. And monitoring software rides along in the background on all the devices. And it's so much fun because you get email once a day or once a week that tells you every place they've been. You're not spying. You just say to your kid, this is the deal to keep you safe, and we'll have a conversation.
So there's always the concern that kids are going to know more than you want them to know at a certain age, and that they won't know what to do with the information. I was reading something you said to a Wall Street Journal reporter a few years ago about that kids should know of pornography by 8 or 9. So there's the standard fear. It's like, well, if they know it, they'll want more of it. You know, if they know how to do sex, they'll want to do it more, things like that.
Right. So with the porn thing, it's at 8, 9, 10, 11, kids are grossed out by sex. They think it's disgusting. So you really want to capitalize on that, right? And what you say is it's normal not to be interested, but you need to know how to manage yourself if a kid on the school bus shows you something on his smartphone, right? And P.S. parents, you do not want to be the parent of the child that shows the other kids porn on their smartphone. You don't. Trust me, you don't. So, sorry, this is a little aside. Some things make me totally crazy. That happens to be one of them. So anyway, so when you talk about it openly, again, their curiosity is somewhat satisfied and they know what to do if they see it. There's a book called Good Pictures, Bad Pictures that is pretty good. It's about how to talk to kids about porn. There are some things I don't agree with it, but there isn't anything better on the market that I've seen so far. And it's for kids age 7 up to about 12 or so. Books are already a part of our lives, so it's an easy way for them to learn. We really need to make sure our kids know ahead of time. And it doesn't mean they're going to go find it. They're going to find it anyway. It doesn't mean they're going to have sex sooner. They're going to have sex anyway.
They'll have a basis from which to start, a place to begin from. Amy Lang is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, the founder of Birds and Bees and Kids.com, the author of a couple of books about sexuality and getting to know more about it as we get older, and help for the parents in talking to kids about this. Welcome back to the Jefferson Exchange with Amy, and take your questions and comments and maybe some of your experiences you can share as well. Back on the Jefferson Exchange in a minute 20. Final segment on today's Jefferson Exchange. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Our guest today is Amy Lang, who is trained in adult education and now trained in adult education about human sexuality. For 16 years now, she's been running Birds and Bees and Kids.com, which offers both online and in person a chance for parents to get up to speed on how it is that they can talk to their kids about sex. Because a lot of parents seem to have some problems in doing that without embarrassment. She's also written a couple of books. She's an Ashland native, or at least a longtime Ashland resident from years ago, back in town to visit family. You can join us on the exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Your questions are welcome. If you have experiences talking to kids that you'd like to share, or perhaps the ways in which the subject was broached with you, we'd like to hear those as well. 800-838-3760, jx@jeffnet.org. During the break, I was mentioning the fact that I had a teen brother and sister, 5 and 7 years older than me, and I said, what does it mean when you guys say F you? And I hear that F word a lot. What does that mean? And my brother told me. So, I mean, how good is it, though, for kids to hear from siblings rather than from parents first?
It's not ideal. If they're older, like yours were significantly older, that can be good because they've had some experience on the planet and they know what they needed to know. But, sometimes parents will rely on trickle down. So they'll think, hey, I'll just tell the oldest kid and then they'll just talk to each other. That's not always true because kids' temperaments are different, right? If you have a super introverted 17-year-old and a really extroverted 10-year-old, that introverted 17-year-old may not talk to the other kiddo. We can't rely on anybody but ourselves to do this. And, I know it seems like it's not fair, but I do recommend enlisting older siblings because if they're well informed, because you've been teaching them and you say, hey, it's okay for you to talk to your sibling about this, 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 and this, and give them a little permission, sometimes they like that. And another interesting phenomenon is that if you have kids that are fairly close in age, sometimes the older kid is like not interested at all. Never asked a question, freaks out if you try to broach a topic, but the younger kid is like, bring it on. So I oftentimes recommend that parents use the younger kid to get to the older kid. So talk openly with the 7-year-old in front of the 9-year-old. Read the book to the 7-year-old when the 9-year-old's around. Every kid eventually needs to know this stuff, so it does require, like us to be sneaky and manipulative and plan what we're going to say before we say it. So
what do you do, though, if you've gotten into the ooh gross zone already and you try to talk to the kids about this and they're like, la, 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 don't want to hear it?
Yeah, so that's hard. I totally and completely relate to this on a personal level. So what you do again is say, you know, hey, I get it. This is uncomfortable and it's my job to make sure you're well informed. So we're going to be talking about this. I'll keep it short. You know, the more you know, the more comfortable and confident you're going to feel. And being uncomfortable is part of life. So welcome to life.
What do you make of our simultaneous reluctance to talk to our kids about sex ourselves and the frequent bristling that school is no place for kids to learn about sex?
So I think what I make of that is this. We need to think about sex ed at school as public health. Like, we need to educate our public because not every parent is capable, for whatever reasons, of doing what their job, doing their job when it comes to the sex talk. So if we think about it as public health and we think about it as super important because it is part of being human, and we quit worrying that somehow, 2 weeks of some kind of sex ed curriculum is going to completely change our child's mind and make them run out and do it, they're not. We have the most influence over them. So if we're talking openly about sexuality and our values, I'm a big proponent of parents understanding and communicating their sexual values, whatever they are, conservative, liberal, something in the middle. If we do that well, what happens at school is it's supplemental to what they already know. When your kid has that fifth grade sex ed class, they should already know pretty much everything that's going to be taught. Because then when they're in that classroom, they're going to learn more. They're going to hear it from a different source. They're going to be more comfortable. And someone at my house, after he had his first official sex ed class at school, came home and was like, wow, I cannot believe the stupid questions these kids are asking. You want your kid to be that kid. And he hates talking to me about sexuality and his dad. He told me he'd rather talk to strangers than me or his dad. I mean, this is like heartbreaking for the sex educator. So you want your kid to go in informed. You want them to come out a little bit more informed. And you need to let go of somehow school having so much influence over your child that they're going to completely change their moral trajectory. Not going to happen.
Well, and the public health end of things, I mean, you teach a kid how to do first aid and how to deal with a nosebleed and stuff like that, and things are going to happen to their bodies as they get older.
Right, right.
So a couple of calls here. Let's go to Sherry in Ashland. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Amy Lang.
Hi, do you mean Jerry?
Yes, go ahead.
Okay. Hi, Amy. I wanted to tell you a cute story. My grandson at 4 was in a preschool, and his very precocious, rather obnoxious little friend told him in detail about sex, in detail. He came home distraught, tearful, just beside himself. His father came home, sat him down, and gave him a long, drawn-out, kind, gentle explanation. And when he got through, Joseph said to him, "Dad, please tell me you never did that." And Bob wanted to say only 3 times.
That's Jeff, right.
Only 3 times.
That's right.
I love that story. He's now 20.
Good. Good. And he sailed through. You know.
Oh, yes. And he's an admirable child. But thank you. And your program's wonderful. Thank you,
Jerry. Good to hear from you.
Thank you. Then that's, you know, when a kid learns from another kid, the kid's not necessarily going to be accurate. And they're funny. Like, I had one parent tell me their kid described, she overheard her kid describing sex to her someone, and he's like, "And wham, the penis goes in the vagina, and wham, kazow, the sperm goes shooting out." And so if you have a 4-year-old that's talking about it like that, it doesn't sound like fun, and it sounds a little weird and scary. So I love that story. Thank you so much for sharing it, Jerry. It's great.
Good to hear from you, Jerry. Let's go to Derek in Medford. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Amy Lang.
Hey, how you doing? This is Derek in Medford.
Good to have you.
Hi, great, thanks. Yeah, great talk, guys. And yeah, I have a 10-year-old, and then I have 2 adult male children. My 10-year-old's a female. But my story is back in second grade in Independent Elementary in Castro Lake, California, and this little girl, Lynn, a fellow student, she showed me about sex with her dolls. And so when my parents sat me down, and I was born in the 60s, so I've got these hippie parents, and they're going to talk to me about the birds and the bees, and they use that term. And I just looked at him and said, like, what are you talking about? And then finally when he said sex, I go, oh, I already know all about it. And I get up to leave. And my younger brother's still in the room looking just confused. And my dad said, wait, get back here. What do you know about it? And I told him what Lynn showed me. And he's like, well, it's pretty much it mechanically. And then he got into more of the emotional aspect of it and how two people express themselves that way. And so, yeah, I think early talk is important, very important. And, yeah, my daughter, actually, I gave her one of my old cell phones and was factory reset. And she could get on Wi-Fi with it, even though it was terminated, and expose herself to pornography. And it's horrifying just to think about it. And I have an open-minded upbringing towards sex. Hello?
Yeah, we're here.
It's horrifying. It's like I can't look for, I can't think about pornography anymore. It shattered me. Hopefully, she's dealing with it a lot better than I am.
All right, thanks for the call, Derek. Appreciate that. So, point he brings up though about the birds and the bees for kids who might have actually skipped that phase. I mean, the point of bringing up birds and bees is to talk about the fact that it's, you know, everybody
does it. Everything. Yeah. This is how we reproduce. Yeah, and that's why, I mean, and that cute name makes people feel better, right? I wanted to call this my business sex ed for parents, right? But people freak out when I say I'm a sex educator, right? If I say I teach people about how to talk to kids about the birds and the bees, they're like, oh, that's nice.
It's almost like rainbows and unicorns.
And Derek, I just wanted to say, you know, with your daughter's exposure, this is super common. And most parents, just like you, didn't think, oh my gosh, my daughter wouldn't do that. So, you know, I think that this is what I just thank you. Case in point, when our kids are well educated before they're exposed, they have something, they have a place to put that adult stuff like coffee or beer or wine. Like it's adult stuff. It's not for kids. You know, it's scary and comfortable to see. Being very open about, you can tell me if this happens to you, you will not be in trouble, because the person who made the mistake, frankly, was you by giving that child a cell phone without any protection. And I know that sounds harsh, but parenting is not for wimps. If you haven't worked that out yet, parents, then you got something else going on at your house that I don't even get, because parenting's hard.
Derek's story, though, about somebody saying, I know about this already, and the remark back from the parents is, well, that's pretty much it mechanically. I mean, so you can certainly deal with this on a like a dinosaurs and nature thing with 5 to 8 year olds,
yes.
I would think. But then after a while, the emotions have to get in there too. And it's like, you know, you're going to meet somebody going to feel this way, that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, so what is the proper age to introduce all that?
We really need to introduce it all together. So it's this physiological thing that we do. You know, we're driven to do it to reproduce, but 99% of the time people are doing it for fun because it feels good. So making sure kids understand that it does feel good, but because their hearts, minds, and bodies aren't mature enough, it's not for kids. It's for later in life. And you'll notice I never say it's for marriage or adults, because that's a lie. I don't lie to my child. I say it's for later in life. Teenagers have sex. I'm not down with teenagers have sex. As we all now know, I think everyone should be 28 when they have sex. When you talk about it, say it's an emotion, there's an emotional connection that happens between people. It can be confusing. It can be fabulous. That's why you really, really need to know your partner and have a good friendship relationship with them and be able to communicate with them about everything. And that's why you need to tell your kids, say to them, and that's why we're going to have lots of conversations about this. So you're as ready as you can be.
Let's take another call. Here's Evelyn in Gold Beach. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Amy Lang.
Oh, good morning. Oh my gosh. I where was this woman when I was raising my son by myself as a divorced single mom? You are so perfectly suited for what you're doing. And I enjoy your sense of humor, and you're just, you know, down to earth. Here it is. And if you don't like it, then don't have kids, kind of deal.
Evelyn, when did you finally have the talk, or did somebody else take care of it for you?
Well, you know what? I had my son was very involved in sports, which was awesome because I knew where he was and all of that. But his coach, whom he adored, he and I had a conversation because Sean, my son, was getting, you know, curious, and the three of us sat down and we had an awesome conversation about, you know, what was happening to his body and why. And and my son is now a school psychologist, and my daughter-in-law is a school speech therapist, and I'm going to make sure they know about your book.
Thank you. Thank you. And, you know, one of my things I've noticed over the years is that single moms actually do a really good job at talking to their kids about sex because I think they're like, they feel like, I'm it. I got to make sure my kid's okay. And they also know for themselves all their confusion around if they were in, went through a divorce process or whatever their relationship is with the baby daddy. They know how complicated that can be. So it's actually, you know, if the fact that you were smart enough to get help having the conversation with your son, you know, kudos to you. Kudos to you.
Evelyn, thanks for sharing this story. Amy, what kinds of advice do you give parents on examining their own thoughts and feelings about sex before talking to the kids? It seems like some self-review and self-examination is a good place to start.
Yeah, totally. I mean, I think this is a constant reflective process. So when I started this business, Milo was 5. He's 15 now. My values have changed over the course of the last 10 years. So I think the most important thing for parents to do is to really think about, like, what do you think this is a really easy place to start. Like, what's important for you, for your child to know about sex, love, and relationships? Like, what are some of your core things that's like, what do they need to know? Like, what healthy relationships look like? That's one of my core values. You know, one of my core values is that I want Milo to be very well educated about the facts of sexuality so he knows how things work. You know, I also think that understanding your own experience of sexuality and remembering that your children are not you, they're not being raised in your family of origin, and they are living in a very different culture than you did, no matter where you're from on the planet. The culture has changed a ton. And so my book that's called Birds and Bees and Your Kids, it's available on Kindle. That helps you clarify your values about sexuality. So ask a bunch of questions because you need to know where you stand on these things before you have the conversation. So, like, what do you think about abortion? Are you pro or anti-abortion? And why? What do you think about sex before marriage? Would you let your teenager have sex in your home? That's something that lots of parents immediately knee-jerk say, no way. And I just want you to just calm the bleep down and get rational, excuse me, and get rational about that. You know, your children are going to end up having sex at some point. And so when you're really clear about those things or clearer, it's easier to talk to them because values are half the conversation. The rest of it is facts. You can Google stuff and then they're like, this is what birth control is, blah, blah, blah. And then this is my value about birth control or condom use. So when you're clear about your values, it gives you roots. It makes you feel more confident in having the conversation, and it leads to more interesting conversations with your kids.
Will, no town given, emailed to say, I'm a 68-year-old man with a 45-year-old son. I totally agree with Amy's ideas. My wife and I started our discussion when our son was just about 5. We started simply and added details as time progressed. I think he turned out great. So another person in your corner. Yay. Amy Lang is the founder of BirdsandBeesAndKids.com. She's the author of a couple of books, including Dating Smarts, What Every Teen Needs to Know to Date, Relate, or Wait, out last year. Always good to have you, Amy Lang. Thanks for coming by.
My pleasure. Thank you.